You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey, Alex.
Hey, Nick.
So Halloween time is approaching. It's almost here.
It is.
I mean,
it's scary how close it is.
I'm going to ignore that. I'm going to ignore that fucking pun. I'm just going to keep talking because that's dumb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but Halloween is here. And I just wanted to ask you, what is, would you say, the scariest proposition for your future? Like, what's the scariest version of your Halloween? What potentially happens on your Halloween that would make it the scariest Halloween ever?
Halloween is what, on the 31st?
That's correct.
Knowing that I could stay awake,
yep.
Physically, I could stay awake long enough to the election.
Yep.
There is
yep.
that little time from Halloween to the election of the next president of the United States. That is what I will be thinking about on October 31st,
yeah.
is how close November 3rd is.
Yep. That's precisely.
Because then the next 4 years becomes an extended Halloween, right? But without the fun costumes and decorations.
Well, I'd say there are costumes, but they're certainly not fun.
A lot of masks.
A lot of masks. A lot of white hoods and torches.
Both literal and metaphorical masks that people are wearing.
But you know, that's exactly what I'm glad you picked up on what I was saying, because that is exactly where my mind went. Was just like, good Lord. we're staring down the barrel of some really scary shit. But you know what gave me hope was number one, Biden's town hall. I love Biden's town hall. I thought it was beautifully done. And number two, Borat, man.
I can't wait. I can't wait. Did you hear about that?
Dude, I am so excited. Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah,
brilliant. Brilliant. Let's go.
Brilliant.
Let's go. And, you know, you get your licks in where you can, and any time that you can catch Rudy Giuliani touching himself on a hotel bed, I'd say that's a win, you know? That's a win. So, good for you, Borat. You really really saved the day there. Oh, God.
I wish I had a pun or something to cap that off, but I don't.
I got a pun for
you. Just sitting here thinking about Rudy Giuliani touching himself now.
Yeah, I got a pun for you.
All right, go for it.
Joe Biden, please win.
Little justice. Fuck yeah.
Please win.
Joe Biden, please win.
Please. welcome to Little Justice, the election anxiety podcast.
Like, the cold opens just devolved into us like talking about how terrified we are for the future.
Absolutely. which you know, it's
the only energy that exists anymore is like political anxiety.
And I would say that, you know, I think that both of us do a good job of trying to forge our own way. You in the world of real estate, which is pretty incredible. You've been doing some amazing stuff, developing some.
I've been pivoting, because like who knows what the future holds, right? I thought I should do something that's gonna last a while, something that's going to carry me forward in my life instead of, you know, because when you're freelancing and you're doing work on projects, really at any level, you do the work, you put the work in, and you have an end result, and then you set that aside and move on to the next one, and then you have a result. With real estate, though, what I'm finding is like you do a project and then you move on to the next one, but the last one you did is now part of what you're doing, right? You hang on to it. It continues to produce things for you. So you can build it bigger and bigger. And I'm enjoying the process. It's a lot like filmmaking. It's collaborative. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of stuff to learn. There's a lot of nuance. There's a lot of creativity. And I'm lucky enough to be able to do that.
So let me ask you this, Alex. You know, with this, you know, yeah, you have the funds to do it. Is it something that you would suggest that everyone get into, or is it for a specific brand?
Yes to both. There is a plethora of stuff out there. I started if you just Google real estate, I assume the first thing that's going to pop up is a company called Bigger Pockets, which they have a podcast and they have books and they have all this stuff. Is this guy Brandon Turner and his whole team of people that really make it kind of an accessible process, right? But it's real estate's a living, breathing thing, right? Everybody needs a place to live. So it's always going to be relevant. But it changes based on where you are, like literally to the block that you're on, right? The value and utility of a home on one block is different from a house across the street in minor ways. But the you know, if you project it out, then yes, across the country, like there's just so much. There's so much variability. And then, you know, you can buy a house cash and turn it around with cash. You can go to a bank and get a loan. You can get private money. You can get, like, there's so many different ways to approach each step of it in terms of acquiring a property, in terms of working on a property, renovating it, in terms of refinancing it, renting it out, you know, how you go about it and how you do it. You know, you hear a lot of stories of people who they start with nothing, right? They don't have people who have $5,000 in savings, find a way through either, you know, getting somebody to front them a loan, finding a way to acquire a building in their name that rents out. And then you start a little cash flow, you know, even if it's $10 a month that you have at the end of all the mortgage payments and all that, like if you do that a lot, then that grows and grows and grows. And every time you do it, the pile gets a little bit bigger. So I think people would be surprised if they just did the research themselves, how accessible and able they are to dive into real estate.
Yeah, it really is something that I think, you know, has always, like, it's interested me, but I also, you know, I find that, like, for me, number one, my brain power is always going into like writing. Like that's just my go-to. That's my go-to, like, fallback job, which is funny because it's not even a fallback job. Do you mean like it's
you have to make it a job first? Well, that's that, because I'm the same way, right? Like I try to write all the time. The kind of the reason I'm doing this, and I'm putting a lot of work into it, like it's every day I wake up, my properties are on the East Coast, so I'm waking up to phone calls from contractors and, you know, whatever. But eventually, right, like I was saying before, like the pile builds, eventually it's going to put me in a place where if I want to go off and write a book, if I want to go off and write a screenplay or make a movie and take 6 months, I know that behind the scenes, I'm still making money. Like I'm stabilizing the income source. It's going to take years and years and years to get to the point where I don't need to worry about finding a job or anything like that. But I'm building it, you know, moving forward, because it's going to enable the more creative pursuits down the road.
Yeah. No, it's wonderful. I mean, it's really, and I know that you've worked so hard with it, and I know that
I have.
Really,
and really, yeah. The sugar on top. My wife is an architect and designer, so we together she's been really helping a lot in terms of making floor plans and renderings, and like it's become kind of a family project. So it's it's great.
Look at you! You're like a regular Sears and Roebuck,
Sears and Roebuck.
It's amazing.
I'll just go with I'm like that.
You're like that.
Is this something? Is real estate something that you're interested in pursuing?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, dude. Real estate for me, it's so funny. I just had a friend who I actually want to bring on this podcast. This guy Rob McClure, who is a amazing actor, big kind of Broadway legend, TV film guy as well. And he was talking about just the idea of like that, the idea of a backup job doesn't exist. That it's like, really, we just need to get this thing out of our head of like, we're either working in theater all the time or working in arts all the time, and or we're not successful.
Right.
He's like, if you need to do something else, like if your joy is found in putting food on your table that night, whatever you need to do to put food on your table, do it.
Here's what I want.
I'm definitely in a place where I'm like, yeah, I want my money to work for me. I've saved up a lot of money. I want to put that money to work. I want that money to grow. I want to invest in something that then, you know, does some work for me. And the stock market seems like an interesting place to do that. I don't know enough about it, and I don't trust it yet to do that. So housing is certainly an interesting thing to look at. But I don't know. I think right now where my mind is at is like, let me see what my artistic hustle gets me. You know what I mean? Just because it's served me thus far, and it seems to still be, you know, giving me traction.
Well, it's not like you have to stop doing what you want to be doing in order to pursue something like real estate or investment. You know, it's kind of geared because, like I was talking about, there's different levels of entry, right? There's different entry points where you can either go full bore, like I'm doing, kind of where everything all day is invested in trying to make this thing successful. But there's always houses for sale, and there's always people needing to rent them. Like, you can buy a house that's ready to go and rent it out to somebody who wants it and have a property manager watching it, doing very, very little work. There are things like real estate investment trusts, REITs, where it's literally just investing in the rental market, in the housing market, instead of the stock market. There are trusts that are built out of property holding companies. There's a lot of different ways to do it. And I think it's a lot more stable than the stock market. 2008 is maybe an exception, but people are always going to need a place to live. So,
yeah, no, it seems like there's definitely a lot there to consider and, you know, and to try. I mean, my thing when I say like, I like that what you said about having different entry points, because that's my thing, is like, the amount of time I put into this side of my life, like I was like, I just don't, you know, the amount of work that you've put into it, I'm like, do I have time to do that with everything that I'm trying to get going? But again,
mine is a little absurd, because I've pivoted completely, right? I'm not taking freelance work. If someone approached me with a job that didn't pay what I needed or what I felt like, I would turn it down right now.
Yep. But dude, so, I mean, look, listen, you're happy.
I would take that job and I would slash it. You know, I'm taking all the unnecessary stuff in my life and slashing it.
We really need to work on these fucking transitions, because it's not only that, like, I'm not even saying they're bad. What I'm saying is, like, it cuts off the flow of like, who said I was ready for you to transition? You know what I mean? Like, maybe I had to ask you.
Okay, we could keep
no,
going.
No.
We're about 15 minutes in now. We fucking transition.
We're in it. I was going to talk about 50 Cent and how he looks like a Republican now, but I don't even want to talk about that.
I do not want to talk about 50 Cent and how he looks like a Republican. I'll get angry.
Yeah. Don't talk about that. This is making me angry. But yeah. We can talk about the theme for today, which is slasher films. The slasher films.
Very Halloween-y.
Very Hollywood. That's the whole point. We're doing this. This is a Halloween episode, guys. It's our first Halloween episode.
Politics and real estate investment.
And slasher films. I think that's gonna be the I'll make that the tagline for this episode. Politics, real estate, slasher movies. But you know, so yeah, the slasher film is very interesting, because you know, the slasher film is actually the one horror film that I can watch. I don't find these scary at all. Like, I truly don't. You know, they are so fun and at this point formulaic. You know, and that was the thing, like slasher as a genre does have a specific formula. You know what I mean? Like, what are the things just off the top of your head that you think go into a slasher film? What makes a slasher film?
I think it needs to start with characters who are not involved in the threat at all.
Yep.
I think the threat needs to be a separate entity that slashes its way into an otherwise idyllic or normal situation, right? It's the disruption of the norm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's certainly this, you know what it is? It's that disruption. It's also the focus is in a way more on the killer than it is on the character, than it is on your protagonist, right? You have your, what is kind of, you know, at this point, outdatedly named the final girl, right? Like,
right.
Like, which is, you know, could be a guy, could be anybody, right? The final character to kind of survive out of, as everyone's picked off. But, really it you know that kind of idea that the killer is this force that is coming to
I would say the final girl thing is a trope. I wouldn't say that applies to all slasher movies.
No, like there's not
this,
at all.
This idea that you start as a group, it's usually like teenage-esque people. I took a horror class in college, and I remember we kind of talked about how these movies are actually metaphors for punishing sex, right? It's always the virgin who's the last one to survive, surrounded 100%. By you go off to the campsite, the cabin, whatever, and everybody's if you have sex, you're gonna die.
Yeah.
It Follows, which we've talked about on here before, does that. You know, it kind of turns that on its head. But I don't think that's necessary for a slasher film. I think that it just got comfortable in that area. That's because it works. The formula works. You get beautiful people and then you stab a knife through them.
Well, that's the idea, right? Is it's beautiful people. You're watching beautiful, often horny people, being murdered one by one. And it's, you know, but it's different from like a psychologically horror film or psychological horror film or, you know, a thriller, in that it is, you know, slash, it does evoke, you do want some sort of sharp object in there or just a sense of, you know, like something. Yeah,
do you think the slash is important? The literal slash?
I think it's absolutely important that there be at least one attack with a knife. I think that the idea of being of a blade, right? Because you think about it, you think about all these movies, like something sharp at some point has to,
right.
That is
what
so
has
much
to be, yeah, it has to be something that they can keep in their hand, because the threat is this thing is stalking towards you. This thing is pursuing you with an identifiable object, because it's not just the person that you're afraid of, right? Like, would a slasher movie work with just a really strong person who strangles everybody? Like, maybe if he was really big?
maybe. I mean, you know, honestly, like, could, but like, it's also that thing, right, where so much of the fun of a slap, you know, a strangle, it's the immediacy of the death. That's kind of the fun of, not the fun of, it's terrible. We're talking about people being murdered and being like, oh, it's fun, but it is.
I mean, if you stop and think about it like that, yes, it's terrible.
Yes.
But you got to put that aside. You got to put aside that, okay, it's elevated above reality, right? It puts it in a cartoony nature, you know, so that you can enjoy the jump thrills and yelling. And that's why the characters in these movies are usually so stupid and make so many mistakes, right? Where they run into the dark room instead of away, because it's, then you yell at the screen, right? Going to a late night slasher movie, like in a theater with people, is the most fun thing ever, because everyone's involved in just like screaming at the screen, like, you idiot, what are you doing? Like, and you forget that it's actually, you know, it's human beings being slaughtered.
Yeah, it really, and it goes back, right? I mean, and, you know, speaking on that idea of the sexuality and the fear.
Let's talk about sex and fear.
Let's talk about sex and fear, guys. Let's talk about that shit. It's hot. It's fucking hot. Sex and fear, sex and fear, sex and fear. You like that? Weird.
I do.
Weird, right? But, you know, going back to the idea of, you know, that's back, goes back to the Hays Code in the 1930s, where those things were banned from art and film. And then, you know, as the times went on, there was almost an explosion of that, especially in the 60s and 70s. And that's when these movies started coming to light, right? Was this kind of, you know, this kind of out of the free love movement, out of the craziness of the late 60s, you come into 74, and all of a sudden people are, you know, people want to see these very visceral things on a screen and kind of have fun. Because think about what's happening. Vietnam, and like, also you had a period where like every friggin' civil leader that you had was killed in a very public way, you know, so kind of being able to be comfortable with blood and with violence, I think was necessary. But yeah, you know, this idea, and think about what these early slasher films were, these kids, you know, these, like you said, the interruption of stasis, these kids in an idyllic idyllic landscape, be it at their high school or at their camp, you know, where they feel so safe, and then all of a sudden something comes in to disturb them. Is that not what what the late 60s were? Yeah. You know, this period where everyone felt safe, and then all of a sudden there was just all this agitation that just lets you know that you weren't safe.
Reality comes in. Do you think that there's an extension of the ghost story? Because obviously ghost stories have been around a lot longer than slasher movies. This idea of someone sitting there telling you, like, this person's going to come get you and you're going to die, like this, you know, that you're being hunted, that you're under
certainly threat. Certainly an idea of revenge. Certainly an idea of things, you know, I think, you know, going back to like Edgar Allan Poe and the Telltale Heart, you know, this idea, the things that you can't, suppression. I think whenever you have a story about suppression, I think that that's when these themes come up, because it's the things that you're trying to ignore, or the things that you're, you know, that you're running from. You know, it really, and that's a theme that you'll find in a lot of these movies are people who, and again, we're talking about these movies like they're, I mean, I think they are high art in a way, but these movies are popcorn movies, you know, they're fun. They're not meant to be overanalyzed, but like there is a consistency in these films where the people who are your leads are, you know, whether it's, you know, not going all the way with their boyfriend or girlfriend or, you know, not accepted at school, like there's something that they are that causes a little bit of suppression, and this killer is almost like takes the form of that suppressed energy, and that's, you know, that right, that need, you know. So it really is kind of a cool way to look at those years, look at those teenage years. And
so does a film like It Follows, where the thing coming to kill you is not even maybe a physical being with a weapon, but, you know, or even a movie like The Fog, or a movie where it's a group of people being slowly picked off by some outside force that's not understood. Like, do those movies count as slashers in a way, or is the figure with the weapon what makes a slasher?
I think the figure with the weapon is a trope of a slasher. I don't think it is what makes the slasher. I think that the reason It Follows, I don't consider it a slasher, is because it's not, quite frankly, I think number one, it's not necessarily gory enough. Like slasher, you need that. There's something slasher to me. When I think slasher, it's gotta be an element of camp.
Gotta be. Yeah. Okay.
There's, you know what I mean? Like It Follows is like an art house horror movie.
Right. So the style is a big part of it.
The style is a huge part of it. And also just that sense of, you know, I think that the other thing It Follows doesn't have, it does have people being picked off, but it's not like a group of people that one by one get picked off. That's kind of the fun of a slasher as well, is like, you know, who's going to survive? Who are the last two standing? Do you mean out of this kind of crazy cast of characters, who are the last standing? And It Follows really doesn't have that as much as it has. Like, I mean, certainly people in that group get picked off, but not in the same way where you're counting down to the final quote unquote right. girl. You know, so yeah. And The Fog, same thing. I think The Fog is, you know, definitely a horror movie, but I don't think it's a slasher. You know, and yeah, I say
or,
that, you know,
I mean, because you could translate it even to something like Jurassic Park,
yeah,
you know, or a movie like that, or what's that M. Night Shyamalan one with where the wind is coming for you?
Oh, The Happening,
Happening,
which we just need.
I guess
to
that's more
an
of
entire,
a disaster movie. I need to watch it again. That's one that I want to do. I want to do a series where we watch movies and talk through them. You know, what's the show where they do that? Something 3000, Mystery Science Theater.
Oh, Mystery Science Theater. No, I mean, it is a disaster movie. It's also just a disaster of a movie.
Yeah,
but like, I love it. No, I love it. It's so fun. I mean, and like part of me wonders, I really do wonder if he was trying to make a B movie. Like just a really strange, because like he just didn't, my thing is like he didn't commit to either one hard enough for me to know
I read an opinion that The Happening was a reaction to his critics. It was just a complete like fuck you to the critics of like, you know what, you want me to make an M. Night Shyamalan movie, I'm gonna make you the most M. Night Shyamalan movie possible without giving a shit, like, you know.
Oh my god, but it's so
crazy.
It was
crazy. Kind of temporary career suicide, but
yeah, a happening. It happened.
It happened.
It did happen.
So, okay, so slasher movies. So you don't find them scary. So last time we did a horror episode, it was tough because we both watched them at 2 in the morning.
Yeah,
and it was actually like these movies are meant to scare the crap out of you. But there's no hesitation going into a slasher movie, even though it's meant to scare you, even though there's gore, even though it has a lot of the same elements of like a horror movie.
No, but
there's no apprehension.
There's no apprehension because a slasher film is fun. Like the very nature of it is not about. It's actually a fun scare. Hereditary is meant to traumatize you.
Hereditary is not fun.
Hereditary is trying to hurt you. Hereditary says you're gonna come in, you're gonna sit down, I'm gonna punch you in the face. And slasher films, I think, you know, are kind of opposite. It's like you're gonna have like we're just kind of there's a wink to the audience. There's like a slight wink.
Right.
Like I know that this is, you know. And yeah, Sarah loves them. You know, Sarah's been watching them all throughout, October. You know, I think Sarah's one of those people for whom October 1st to October 31st is all Halloween.
It's Halloween time. Is she doing all right without Mickey's not so scary Halloween?
She is coping. She's coping.
Yeah.
It's not the best, but it's not the worst. It's not as bad as it could be. You know, so she's definitely coping, but, it's just certainly a thing of, you know, having to really. Oh, I yawned there. You must be boring me, Alex. I'm so sorry. No, I think it's it's just fun. Like,
it's just fun.
It's just fun. It's watching stupid teens say stupid shit, and watching these adults like not believe them and just these horrible situations. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick advertisement break to pay for things. But when we come back, we will have some
money
movie money. Choices for you. We will be right back.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
And we are back. We are back. We are back. The movie that I picked is actually, it's arguably not necessarily a slasher movie. But I mean, I think it is. I think it follows all the rules of a slasher film. And I think it was marketed as a slasher film because of the era in which it came out. But I don't think it is.
It actually is. You want to lay it out? You want to just get started?
Yeah, let's get started. Let's see. So we open on a black screen. We hear a familiar guitar riff. It's like a cover, but it's not like the actual people sing it. It's a cover. And then we hear, "We don't need no education." We open on a football field.
Oh my God.
Yep.
Wait, please tell me that this is what I think it is.
Does it have Robert Patrick as a football coach?
Yes, and it has Elijah Wood in it.
Yes, it does.
I cannot believe that.
We don't need no.
Okay, so this is a good thing. So the movie is, of course,
The Faculty.
I need to leave story. I have no page one.
Well, we found a new phylum in biology. It's bizarre. Really bizarre. Mr. Furlong thinks it might be a new species.
Ooh, let me race to the stands for that issue.
Why do you rag on me so much? What did I do?
Nothing. It's just your fate. You're that geeky Stephen King kid. There's one of you in every school.
We can't go in here.
Ugh, come on, Casey. You're with me. Be brave.
I cannot tell you guys, I love this movie so deeply.
I remember this movie. I've watched this movie a long time ago. I haven't seen it in a very long time. It was like right in the period it was supposed to be seen, right?
Yeah.
Like high school, like early high school, where you think that Josh Hartnett's like the cool bad boy. There's the cheerleaders. And it's like you kind of buy into that whole high school hyrarchy nonsense. And the
Usher
the
was there.
Usher was just there. Didn't he just show up in She's All That too?
Yes.
Was that Usher?
Was it Cisco in She's All That? I don't know.
He's like the morning DJ at the school.
Oh yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Like
yes,
he is. just shows up. The Faculty. Okay, well, so for people who haven't seen it, lay it out. What is it?
So The Faculty is, this is why I say it's not a slasher, because it opens like a slasher. It opens on, you have this football coach, being a hard ass to his players, and then he's approached by like some mysterious figure, and he's like, "Yeah, what do you want?" And then we cut to later, the teachers are having a meeting, and the principal, played by B.B. Newworth, is warning everybody they don't have funding for anything but football. Football is the only thing that the school can handle right now. No money for the drama club. They make this funny joke about how the students had their hearts set on guys and dolls this year, and B.B. Newworth's like, well, maybe if they use the set from our town, which is like, it's just brilliant. It's brilliant little theater humor. But yeah, just the idea that football is what is making this town run, this Ohio town. And she is locking up for the night, and Piper Laurie, as the drama teacher, is like the last to leave with her. But then she forgot her purse in the office. She goes back to the office, and Robert Patrick, as the coach, is there. And he is like, "You look really pretty tonight." And she's like, "Go home, coach. You're drunk. Sleep it off." But he is like changed. Like, he's not the same coach that we saw in the beginning. He is like horny and like weird. He takes a pencil and shoves it through her hand and starts chasing her around the school. And basically from there, that's like the most slasher-esque moment, right? But from there, it becomes a Body Snatchers movie. Essentially, where this alien form is taking over the school and is, there's like these little slug worms that like get into your ears, and that's what took over the coach, and now it's taken over the principal. And Elijah Wood plays our young virgin who's like at the center of this, and he has like, it's basically like the Breakfast Club mixed with Invasion of the Body Snatchers. That's the best way to describe it. You have like the entire cast of like high school characters. You have the nerdy virgin, the jock, the cool bad boy, the new girl, the cheerleader, the goth chick, and they're all battling these aliens. And
I do like that this film does that puts all of those different archetypes together, like working together.
Oh, it's my favorite. It's so cool.
I think you're right in that I don't think it is a slasher film. I think it's an alien film. I think it's a monster movie, right? Because it is Body Snatchers. It is, it's not a singular, if it was a singular alien, like Alien, the movie Alien, yes, is a slasher movie.
Yes.
But I think that's because there is a singular danger.
Yeah, well, I think it is. There is a singular danger in that it's the alien, right? It's also because it shifts, right? I think that's the beauty of the film, is that it kind of almost goes back to that. What's that movie with Denzel Washington? Is it Fallen, where the devil keeps jumping bodies, and so you never know who the bad guy is? That's the idea, right? Because I think what makes the movie great in its body snatcher form is that you really actually don't see a lot of aliens. Like, you see the big alien at the end, like the queen alien.
Yeah.
But so much of it is just these, you're just being chased by people you trust.
What if one of us was an alien right now? How would we know?
He's right. How do I know you're really Casey?
How do I know you're really you?
Body snatchers, humans became emotionless. They completely lost their identities.
The coach had emotion. I mean, he's usually a real hard ass, but he was different somehow. His behavior was slightly odd.
Like a star quarterback who mysteriously quits the football team?
What are you doing, Delilah?
I'm just pointing out your slightly odd behavior, Stan. You've been acting really weird the last couple of days.
I'm not an alien. I'm discontent.
It's like this, and that's what made it a slasher film to me, is that it really is almost like this entity that just takes over, and all these people kind of start acting in this very specific way. You know, my favorite is Famke Janssen as the English teacher, who Josh Hartnett's character Zeke, you know, is giving a hard time in her class, and she's like this meek English teacher, you know, just try, or, you know, what was what, like, she's like, there's this scene in the beginning where she's like trying to, it's this great scene where she's like, what was, this author's or this character, oh my God, I forget the character's name, but what
this
was
is riveting retelling.
Shut up. What was his greatest fear? And like Zeke, like, gives her a hard time in class, but has the answer because he's like the badass who's actually secretly smart and all the shit. And then like when she gets overtaken, like she becomes like this freaking vampirella, you know, like gets rid of the, I love how like whenever anybody needs to turn sexy in a movie, they like just have them take off their glasses. It's like right. The stupidest freaking thing. But like like she's like walking around the school like her GoldenEye character Xenia on a top, and like, you know, basically molesting these students. And
pretty disturbing in and of itself.
Oh, it's terrifying. It's ridiculous. And she's talking about like condoms and stuff. It's look weird.
Yeah.
But the chase scenes are, it's not a monster movie in that like there is no, it really is. It feels like a slasher movie. It feels like all the set pieces feel like slasher movie set pieces. Yep. You're trapping them in the school bus. You're trapping them in the gym. You're trapping them in the locker room. You're trapping.
Right.
I mean, like. It's not about
and
who
it's,
is.
And it's places that should, I think maybe one of the ideas of a slasher movie too is that places that should be safe aren't, right? Well, the neighbor, Halloween takes place in the neighborhood you live in.
Yeah.
You know, Friday the 13th is at camp.
Exactly.
Know?
And that's what, I mean, that's what makes it, you know, for Casey, for Elijah Wood's character, who is very much kind of our POV character. I wouldn't even call him the lead, but I'd definitely call him the central character. I think that's, we're seeing so much of it through his eyes, and his eyes are somebody who's very scared of high school. Like it is a representation of what he's going through, where he's not new to the school. I think he's a junior or sophomore at this point in the movie, but the idea that like he's never fit in and what it takes to make friends, you know, there's this recurring theme with, you know, I think it's a very Breakfast Club theme of like all these kids from like these different archetypes trying to be more than their archetype. And you know, the cheerleader is also the editor of the school paper, the goth girl, you know, secretly likes sports, the sports guy doesn't want to be a sports guy, the nerdy kid wants to be a cool kid, the cool badass is actually it has been held back for 4 years. You mean like,
yeah, well, so like what's the central theme around a body snatcher type movie is what you think is real is not, right? The thing that you think it is, it's actually something, right? It's the thing, the movie, the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the same idea of you can't trust anything. And that correlates so directly to the high school experience, right? Of these students who are looking at the world around them and having concerns about what it actually means, who it actually is your teacher, who is this coach, like who am I, what do I want to be, and translating that fear into something.
And that terrifies them. And also the idea of, you know, I think the one thing that doesn't play in as strongly to this movie that maybe doesn't make it a slasher movie is the sexuality, right? The sexuality in this movie is, it's not about horny kids fucking. I mean, they definitely all have crushes on each other. Like, don't get me wrong, but it's not necessarily about like, ooh, let's find the lake, you know, the cabin by the lake so we can all, you know, sleep together.
But the expectation for that is there, and it subverts it, which I think is just as important, right?
Yes,
it's coming from the teacher instead of the students, and the jock who should be caring about that doesn't.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
And the drug guy, right? The druggie who's usually the fuck up stoner guy is actually the one seduced, you know, who's not seducing, but being seduced by the teacher and is the sexual, you know, target.
Messes with all those. I mean, and to me, the best sequence in this film, the part when I knew that this movie was like really playing with that idea of camp and playing with that idea of fun. And like, truly, I look back at like this movie's aesthetic and like my aesthetic, and I'm like, wow, these are so aligned in so many ways. It's the goddamn snorting Adderall scene. So they figure out that like this alien life form that is inhabiting their friends can be, you can, the kind of the litmus test to see if you've been taken over is that the alien needs a wet environment to live. So if you dry out your body, the alien will freak out. So they're like, oh, well, we can just snort Adderall. And Zeke has been, you know, the badass stoner has been selling Adderall in pens. Like these, like he has like this.
Remember the pens.
Oh my God, dude. It is literally my favorite. And they literally just have the scene where they all just snort Adderall, like,
because that makes sense. That'll dry out your body to a degree that the alien won't.
Oh my God, it's so good.
What about you, Zeke? How do we know you're not one of those fucking things?
Don't get high on my own stash, man.
Fuck that, man. You're taking it.
You're taking it.
Now what the hell's wrong with you?
Nothing's wrong with him, you asshole. He's tweaking. Let him fucking tweak.
Now you.
It's so good. I love that movie so much, man. It just
the
makes
faculty.
Me the faculty and Elijah Wood as the final girl. You know what I mean? Like, I think that
I do love that too. That he's the nerdy virgin.
Yep. It really is a excellent film. Excellent film. Yeah. Can't say it enough. The Faculty by Robert Rodriguez and Kevin Williamson.
Holy shit, it was Robert Rodriguez, wasn't it?
Of course. I mean, that's why half that cast is in Sin City.
I forgot. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and you watch it and it's literally, I mean, he has such a distinct style of filming. It's like filmed like all his other movies. It's so...
I mean, it's a very stylish movie. That scene, the football field, I remember from the trailer, because this was right in that era where every teen movie had some like rock band do an associated song with the music video. Is just clips from the movie, and so like a lot of the shots in the movie are made for music videos. Like,
oh
the,
my god,
the, the whole football team is crowded around the coach outside in the rain and lightning, and the alien like tentacles are coming out of his face as
oh
he's slowly
god,
pushing
so
in.
Good.
Like, so dramatic,
it's so good,
just so extra.
I love it so much.
Oh man.
Yeah,
wonderful.
Man.
The Faculty. I want to watch it again. I'll find a VHS copy and watch it in my basement when I'm supposed to be asleep.
I'll do you one better. I got it on Google Play. I'll just give you my password.
There you go. Watching it on Google Play is not one better than a VHS in my basement.
At all.
At 11 years old.
That's right. Yeah, baby.
Well, so my choice actually, I wouldn't say it goes against some of the rules that we've defined here. But it definitely presents them in a different way and a little more seriously. Like it's a little more, there's a lot more to break down than there usually is in a slasher movie.
Okay.
I think especially now these days, and there actually is a new version of it coming out. So that just speaks to that, but we'll see if you can get it and then, we'll talk into it. So we start on a bird's eye view of a street, a busy city street running through Chicago. And you hear Philip Glass music, that repetitive Philip Glass music. It's haunting. There's something weird about it. It's repetitive, makes you uncomfortable as we just slowly pan bird's eye down this Chicago street. Credits roll over top. Then you hear a voice, and it's a woman telling a story, saying that she heard from a friend of a friend something that happened.
This is the scariest story I've ever heard.
Something that happened in the Cabrini Green.
Something that happened in the Cabrini Green.
Yep. Yep. Good boy. Good for you.
And it starts the same way you said, right? Punishing sex.
Yes.
This girl is babysitting and a guy comes over, not her boyfriend, but the guy that she's actually interested in, that, you know, the bad boy she wants to give it up to. And they go up to the bedroom, the bathroom, and they start making out. She says, I want to show you something. Like, have you ever heard of?
Oh, God.
Have you ever heard of Candyman?
No.
Well, his right hand is sawn off. He has a hook jammed in the bloody stump. And if you look in the mirror and you say his name 5 times, he'll appear behind you, breathing down your neck. You want to try it?
So Billy began. He looked in the mirror and he said,
Candyman. 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 Candyman.
Candyman.
The Candyman. The Candy. The Candyman. The Candy. Can I tell you, so what's his fucking name who just won the Emmy playing Dr. Manhattan? Let me see what his name is. Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, who is going to be in this Candyman and who I'm pretty certain is playing the son of Candyman in this movie. In this remake.
Oh, you think so?
Oh,
yeah, the trailer is very different from...
Very different.
It's different.
Yeah, but it feels like a continuation of the story.
Yes.
And not just like a regular reboot, but you know, I think it's this wonderful film that in the same way that, like, I think, you know, it's funny because it is a black horror movie, kind of technically. It uses black folklore and black mythology, but it actually isn't over, like aside from the fact that this man was born out of like a hate crime, the movie itself is I mean, yes, it's
interesting.
It's about gentrification. Go ahead.
It's about a lot. And I was trying, it's maybe the third time ever that I watched it this morning.
Yeah.
And it was, again, one of the movies that we watched in our horror class as like moving through the decades of you know, important horror movies as you go, because there is so obviously baked into it criticism and observation on, you know, on urban disparity,
yeah,
and the black experience and the white experience in relationship to the black experience,
yep,
gentrification and, you know, the projects and the whole movie, you know, so for those of you who haven't seen it, it's about a woman doing her college thesis on urban folklore, and she finds a story about this person, the Candyman, who kills you if you say his name 5 times into a mirror, right? That's the thing. Say Candyman 5 times into, yep, a mirror, and he shows up and he kills you with his hook hand. Very basic, but it narrows very quickly, where it's not just like, it's not like Bloody Mary or whatever, where anywhere you are at any time you say this and he appears. It's like, it's located literally in this housing project.
Yes.
In Chicago. And the whole movie, you know, at this housing project, every time you see it, it's sitting in the shadow of Sears Tower. It's always like they really put a focus on, this is where it's happening, this is who it's happening to.
Yes.
But it's not, if you really try to break apart, like, what are they saying? There are so many different ways you could interpret it. There's not like a definitive statement even being made, which I think... It works. My interpretation is that it works when it shouldn't, or that it wasn't intentional.
Yeah, it really should not come together as well as it does, because it is saying a lot, but it's also just a good horror movie. But it's not even like that's the thing. It's not even like
it's
a slasher.
It's a slasher, in that the Candyman has a hook hand.
Yeah,
and he's slashing people. But it's not a group of people he's after, no, really. But he does kill a group of people.
He does. It's more,
and it's not, and the girl who survives doesn't survive
at all,
and she actually just gets taken over by him, and she's the one who actually slashed.
Yeah,
it's all very, and so that leaves you, you know, with doing so many things differently, it leads you to think, like, why, like, what is this actually about? And there is no clear answer to it.
No, it's
but it feels right.
Well, and that's what the thing. I think it is a very satisfying movie to watch, because I think what it does is it just asks, I think brilliantly, it just asks a lot of questions and doesn't answer them, but it asks the questions. It asks, is gentrification, is urban decay and urban, you know, is that something that's preventable? Ask the question of this white woman kind of looking at like this dying urban culture as like almost like a, like an anthropologist,
right?
You know, what is her implicitness in this?
Well, so I read an interesting article about this in relationship to this movie, and I think it's one of those things that is unintentionally modern, right? There should be like a hashtag unintentionally modern. It's obviously not saying these things given the time it was made, but it says it now clear as day in that our main character, right? This grad student white woman who goes into the projects, you know, confidently and all of that, and inserts herself into these people's lives to figure out what she wants to figure out. She's the bad guy.
Yeah.
She's the evil form, because what happens is it's about this myth, right? It's this myth that's built up inside of a culture that this woman's not a part of, that she goes hunting to try to tell the story, even though it's not even about her. And by the end of the movie, she becomes the new Candyman, right? She's murdered and she becomes the new, the Candyman takes her and she becomes the new story. So it's about this white woman who's taken something that doesn't belong to her, right? She, this whole element of the Candyman who died at the hands of, you know, a racist white, mob of white men. And then became a legend within his own circle.
Yep.
And affected them directly, right? The people were getting murdered in this complex. She takes that, goes, puts herself in the middle of it, and then takes the story over. And the movie sets up moving forward now. It's about her now, right?
Yep.
Forget about all these other people who, like, they triumphantly march to her funeral at the end. Like, it's some big thing. Like, oh, she came in and saved our lives and all that. Like, this is how I know the movie is not trying to say this. The movie doesn't really get it, because she ends up as the white savior, even though it's the complete opposite sort of thing.
Yeah. It's kind of like a mix of both, almost. Like, she's the white savior and the new ghost.
Right.
And what I love is that the new movie is including her story. I don't think Virginia Madsen's playing her again, but she is absolutely a part of the
lore.
So
it's like a continuation of it.
It's very much a continuation. Yeah, it's not. It's set in the same world, same.
Did you know we went to school with Nia DaCosta? Did you know that she was a year or two under us at Tisch?
I did not, but it doesn't surprise me. That's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So the Yaya is playing the son of the little boy whose dog gets killed.
The baby of the woman or the little kid she talks to.
The baby.
Because there's a baby that gets like kidnapped and she saves it from
that baby. That's who he's playing.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So it's gonna be. Yeah. I'm excited for this to see how they expand.
It'll be good. So I think, I mean, from a slasher standpoint, I think it checks enough boxes to be considered a slasher. If you know, the Wikipedia says it's a supernatural slasher movie, because it's a guy with a hook, who's gonna slash you, you know, run for your life. There's like sex, but there's not.
I don't know. Very, very interesting way to look at all this. Like, there's a lot of cool layers that are happening in this movie.
But I'm late.
You are not content with the stories, so I was obliged to come. Be my victim. Be my victim. I am the writing on the wall, the whisper in the classroom. Without these things, I am nothing. So now I must shed innocent blood. Come with me.
A lot of layers.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of layers. Well...
Well, no, that's it, dude. Good.
That's pretty good.
Pick.
Good. That was pretty good. So I mean, what else is out there? Because it's like Scream.
We didn't
Friday
do,
the 13th. Is Texas Chainsaw Massacre a slasher?
Wholeheartedly, yes. Absolutely, 100%.
Like a mutilator.
A mutilator slasher. Definitely Friday the 13th. Definitely.
And then movies like Hush, or The Strangers. Yep. Right, these kind of like home violation movies, I feel like, have that slasher identity.
Yep, I would call Child's Play a slasher.
Child's Play, but with the monster. I mean, that's a
like Nightmare on Elm Street.
Nightmare on Elm Street, Hellraiser,
Scream.
Scream is definitely. I mean, Scream, but Scream is overtly.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a toss up. It's almost parody.
Yeah.
So yeah. Scary movie, you know.
Yeah,
definitely scary, a really good yeah. slasher movie.
Yep. You know it's also kind of a slasher, in a way, or at least was. I read an article talking about how the original Westworld was actually a very big, that precursor.
Oh, it is. Films. Oh, absolutely, it's a slasher film.
Yeah,
because it's about this. The Yul Brynner plays this singular robot who malfunctions, and half the movie is just these characters running from a murderous robot.
A murderous Yul Brynner.
The original movie doesn't have the depth the show has in terms of all the layers and context and all this. It's like a robot malfunctions and chases you and kills everybody in his path. Yep. Terminator slasher movie.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't know if it has to be the sex equals death. Right. I think that's,
it makes it very identifiable, but that's a slasher movie of a certain era.
Yeah.
Of a certain style.
Yeah.
Cause it does go beyond that. I think it's retribution, you know, the slasher is retribution on somebody. It's payment. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun.
But look, it's fun. If there's any ones that we miss, tweet at us.
Tell us what you think. Is Nick's pick a slasher movie? Is The Faculty a slasher movie?
And if you say that it's not, I will fight you. I will fight you. Because I was looking for a way to get The Faculty in. So let me justify
right,
this.
Had to just fit The Faculty in. I mean, I love it. I want to watch it. Clea Duvall, are you kidding me?
Oh my God, she's amazing. Dude, when she came to Hamilton, can I tell you something?
Her at Hamilton?
Me and Javon have a picture with her on Instagram. Dude, when she came to Hamilton, because like she came backstage and she was so sweet. And Clea Duvall, if you're listening to this, I just want you to know you were so sweet. But literally, you know, everyone was like, "Oh my God, I loved you in this and I loved you in this." And I just was like, "Yo, listen, you were in The Faculty, and I just need you to know. I know that you've done so many things beyond that have been so. You know, you did the Laramie Project, you did all this shit."
Carnival,
which is we got to talk about that show because that is a show. I might rewatch that soon. I love that show.
I want to.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I was like, you know, The Faculty. That is, in my opinion, your masterwork. I didn't say that to her, but I wanted to be like, yeah, that movie
was
changed.
Was she in The Craft? She like kind of fit that same mold.
I don't
as
think
the girls
she
from the craft.
Was.
I don't think
in
she was in it.
Craft,
but it was that same Robin Tunney. You know, Neve Campbell kind of thing she had going
she's
on.
She's been, I mean, she's literally been in everything. The Faculty, I'm looking at her filmography. The Faculty, she's all that. Girl Interrupted, 21 Grams, The Grudge, Zodiac, Conviction, Argo, Carnival, Lizzie Borden Chronicles, American Horror Story, Veep. Like, this woman has had a career and has earned a career. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, like, she is incredible.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, you know, check out Clea Duvall if you haven't. But yeah, man. So The Faculty and whatever the fuck you picked, you know,
Candyman. I'm glad they got through that whole movie without playing Candyman Can.
I am also glad because that would have ruined the movie.
That would have absolutely ruined it.
Yeah, man. But listen, you just go and you have the best Halloween. And anyone listening to this, we wish you the best, safest.
Be safe out there, you know? Everyone in masks. It's going to be safe. I've seen some really cool Halloween contraptions for delivering candy. People using PVC pipe and creative ways to give candy to the masses.
Make it happen. And if you are staying in for Halloween, be sure to check out Nightmare Before Christmas, the concert starring myself and our guest, James Iglehart. Did you know about
No, I did know about that. Yeah, you're plugging. I'm happy
baby.
For you. Plug
away. Check it out. October 31st. It's going to be fun. It's going to be crazy.
I see that if I want to see that?
It's going to drop.
Hear it.
I think it's going to drop on Instagram via the Actors Fund Instagram handle and YouTube. There's a bunch of press out about it. So check it out.
Yeah. Which one do you play?
I play Locke. Intern Locke, Shock, and Barrel. Kidnap Mr. Sandy.
Yeah, Locke, Shock, and Barrel. He's
the one with
the devil or the skull?
He's the devil.
The devil guy.
He's the devil.
Gotcha.
Yeah, man. It's pretty
love
insane.
It.
It's pretty insane.
Love it. Cool.
Yeah, dude.
All right. Well, we'll see you next time, everybody.
See you next time.
Little justice.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.